It's my pleasure to introduce Dr. Rachel Heuberger for the next session. She is the head of the Jewish Division of the Universitätsbibliothek Frankfurt am Main, the university library there. She attended Hebrew University, Heidelberg Frankfurt, Rheinische Westfälische Technische Hochschule Aachen. She's also a member of the German North American Resources Partnership as partner of Harvard Judaica Division for Jewish Studies. She's basically an expert in bibliographic Judaism. And as the librarian and cultural historian of modern German Jewry, her publications are with an emphasis on the scientific study of Judaism and the Frankfurt Jewish community. In this talk, Dr. Heuberger is going to address Hirsch and the Frankfurt Jewish community. Won't you please welcome Dr. Rachel Heuberger.
Yes, thank you very much for coming and listening to me, totally stranger to you, came just 2 days ago. And I'm very glad I can talk here in Toronto. And I maybe can present you now a little bit of the reality where Hirsch was living and working and where he founded the first Austrittsgemeinde, the first secessionist community, where it all started for the secessionist movement of Orthodoxy in Germany. So maybe the other talks are more about his theories and his intellectual ways. I want to bring you back down to earth, as you say, and to maybe give you a little picture where he about the situation where he worked and where he did what made him famous, I think. So I'm going to tell you about Frankfurt and the Jewish community and Hirsch in the 19th century. And for this, it is very essential to know, I think, a couple of things which are the basic of his action. Frankfurt is the community in Germany, I think you could say in Central Europe, with the longest continuity, because most of the communities, they were there for a couple of years, a couple of hundred years, but you don't have a German or you don't have a Central European community going back to the 12th century, about 1150, and being in existing with minor interruption until National Socialism, until 1942, or when there was no Jewish community anymore. So there are older communities, there are larger communities, but this is the community which called itself Kehilat Em Israel, because it was the community where you had a continuity and Jews were always living. And this also is very important because it shaped the character of the Frankfurt Jews. They were families over centuries, so the people felt themselves as being Frankfurters, as not being immigrants or had just for a couple of years, but being people who belonged to the town of Frankfurt. And because of this, of course, Frankfurt turned out to be two things, the center of Jewish learning and a very important yeshivot. And on the other hand, it was, of course, a very rich community because Frankfurt was the place of the fairs, where once a year people met and did a trade. So this was the place where Jews who were not allowed into other occupations could earn their money by changing money. So that's why Frankfurt became the center of all the bankers, Jewish banks. And I think everybody knows the name of Rothschild, who comes out of the Frankfurt Jewish community. The founding father, Maya Amschel Rothschild, is a son of the Frankfurt Jewish ghetto, of the Judengasse. And this also is important for understanding Frankfurt life in the 19th century, which made them very big philanthropists, being many, not of course not all, but many rich people in the Jewish community, with a sense that they belong to this town. So there was a very influential philanthropy for Jewish causes, but also for non-Jewish causes. And this is the place where Hirsch, when he, and this is what I have to keep in mind, when he says, later, where I will come back, we have to leave the community. It means he's not leaving a young community. He doesn't ask his members to leave a community they are not connected to. But he asks them to interrupt or to stop a century-year-old tradition, which makes it, of course, much more difficult. So the origins, as I said, of the Frankfurt Jewish community go back to the 12th century. There have been some interruptions where Jews have been thrown out, or there had been pogroms in Frankfurt. One was in the time of the Crusaders, But the Jews always, after a couple of 5, 6, 10 years, came back. We are talking about, let's say, 50 or 100 Jewish families, and resettled in Frankfurt. And that's also how they were counting the community. So that we had the first, the second, the third, which lasted over centuries. And today, after the Jewish community was founded anew after the war, we're talking about the fourth Jewish community in Germany. The Jews always lived around the center of town until in 1462 they were forced into the Judengasse, into a place outside the town, at the borders of the town, outside the walls of the town. And this is the famous Judengasse, and it's the first Jewish ghetto. It's even older than Venice, which is supposed to be the first ghetto. So you had a discrimination of the Jews on one hand, but on the other hand, Frankfurt was the only place where they were then not driven out anymore. So you had a big influx of people trying to move to Frankfurt. And their living, or let's say the rules by which they could live in Frankfurt, was ruled by what we call Stettigkeit, but a series of laws which were discriminating, but they were laws. And in other places you didn't have laws at all. When there was a new ruler, or when you wanted to expropriate the Jews, or you wanted to get to their properties, then the Jews were thrown out. This is a picture, maybe you have seen it once, I don't know. It's a famous, this is the Frankfurter Judengasse, because it's very typical, it has this half round. It's outside on the left of the wall. And this is the center of the town, and this is the Judengasse, and it's reproduced very often in many, many books about Jewish history, because this is the classical example of a Jewish ghetto. It was a street which, when it was started, when the Jews had to move there in the 15th century, it was enough space for their houses, but they were not allowed to enlarge the street. So what happened, people moved into town and they started to build houses like maybe you know today from Amsterdam, very small houses, one next to the other, and they tried to use every space. And in this space, in the end, about 3,000 people lived there, and there Rothschild was born, my Amsel Rothschild. Here you have another picture of this very typical half round, because the whole town was straight. And at the end of the this half round of this Judengasse, there was there is today still the Jewish cemetery, the old Jewish cemetery, and the famous Berner Platz synagogue. Not today anymore, but there it stood. This was the shul of the Orthodox within the Jewish community. I will come back later to it. So these are still places today important for Jewish history. And this is the example for the rights. The Jews got their laws in 1616 regulating their life, meaning that only a number of Jews could move into Frankfurt, meaning that they were not allowed to have certain professions, but only money lending, banking, money changing, little peddlers going from shop to shop. And they were not allowed to leave the Judengasse at night. They could, during the day, they could go out, of course, and have their professions and go to the shops in town. But at night, they had to enter to be back in the Judengasse. And the lock, and there were three gates which were closed. There was one Jew who had a key if there was be an emergency for a doctor or something. But it was really a confined ghetto until the end of the 18th century, until the French Revolution and the soldiers of Napoleon also occupied Frankfurt and destroyed the ghetto physically. And here, this is the picture of the end of the ghetto in the end of in 1796, the end of the 18th century, the fire being caused by the French revolutionary armies, which finally destroyed the Judengasse. And I'm telling you this in this long version because I think it's really important that also we see it maybe today only as a sign of discrimination. For the Frankfurt Jews, it was also a sign that they lived there for centuries and that this was their town. So they really felt as like the non-Jews, like the Christian, as Frankfurters, with all this discrimination which we see, but it was a possibility for them to stay there. And they had their rules and they knew how life was regulated. Now, in the 19th century, after the wall fall, after the revolutionary forces of Napoleon finally destroyed the wall, even when Napoleon was then when the others were victorious and the reaction were victorious and Napoleon was defeated, of course you couldn't in the 19th century force the Jews back to the Judengasse. So the Jews did fight in the 19th century for their rights, and it took them quite a while till only in the 1860s they got rights in 1870s, but they could move out of the Judengasse and they could go into the town, and that's how the former Judengasse looked like in the 19th century. It was then it started to become a slum, and whoever got was moved up the social ladder could move into other parts of town. So of course in the beginning it was around the Judengasse, because there you had the shuls, there you had the mikveh, there you had all the Jewish institutions. And then by the end of the 19th century, Frankfurt Jews moved into, like in every place, into the better parts of town, which are normally the west end of the town. But this still remained, this Judengasse remained the center of Jewish life. And there was a question of demolition, because as I said, it became like a slum area, and the poorer people moved into the Judengasse, the former Judengasse, and the wealthier people, if they could, they moved out. And going together with this demolition of the Judengasse, also a question of what's going to happen with the main shul, which had been there for hundreds of centuries and needed to be renovated. So the renovation, if you want, of the shul, of the main synagogue in town, started the discussion of how would be the character of this new shul, and this in the end led to the forming of the community of Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch. Here you see this synagogue, it's the old main synagogue, which this is a picture or a painting showing it how it looked in 1711. And it had, should have been, it was replaced in the end by a new synagogue. And when the Jewish community started to think about the renovation, then the members of the community who had about in the 1820s, 1830s, 1840s become member of the reform movement, who wanted the synagogue to be a reform synagogue. So it started the question of where do we seat the women, most important discussion was the organ. Will there be an organ or won't it be? And as long as the synagogue stood there, the Orthodox community could continue to use also the synagogue, because that's the way it was. The moment there were discussions about the renovations, then there was a discussion who is going to win. Now we are talking in the years of 1830, 40, after 1830. This is already a revolutionary period in Germany. It's the spring of the peoples, what you call. It's a trial to bring back democracy after the defeat of the French Revolution. And most of the in Frankfurt, many Jews thought that if they would support this revolution, it would also bring them equal rights. And this most of the time went together with the reform movement. The supporters of the Jewish reform movement, who wanted to reform Judaism, wanted to do this also because they thought if we reform our Jewish way of life, we won't look like these old traditional people, and we will become more right. We'll become equal German citizens. So there was a combination from the general politic, where you had a very positive attitude towards revolution, and a strengthening of reform forces within the Jewish community, where they saw, and many famous, well-known representatives of the Jewish community, there were also very well-known figures in Frankfurt of this revolutionary area. And then in 1848, I don't know if you know, Frankfurt was the place where the parliament for rethinking or about how will the German new order be, will it be a democracy or not, took place in Frankfurt. That's the Frankfurt Parliament of 1848. So Frankfurt is on the one hand will be the community of Shimshon Raphael Hirsch will be famous for the secessionists, but before, Frankfurt was famous as a center of Jewish reform. Frankfurt was one of the towns where in 1804, one of the most important reform schools, the Philanthropien, was founded. I just show you first the synagogue, how it did look then from the inside. And that's the new synagogue that was then built. Frankfurt was the center of the reform movement. They were very strong in Frankfurt. They founded the school, the Philanthropien, with a combined secular studies with religious studies. And of course, the secular studies became more and more important. There was a very small but very active Verein der Reformfreunde, which really wanted to change Judaism completely, which tried to abolish the circumcision, Brit Milah. They abolished, the Hebrew texts in the shul, in the prayer, on Shabbat. And they eliminated any connection to Zion, waiting for the Messiah. They were sure that if they would transform Judaism, then they would become members of the community. And this all happened in these years, in these revolutionary years of about starting more or less 1830 or coming to the forefront until 1848. No, the Haupt Synagogue became a Reform Synagogue. The Haupt Synagogue became a famous Reform Synagogue, right? So, as I said, the Reform movement having their center in the Philanthropien. So you had, about 1848, you had two groups in the Jewish community where the Reform group was taking over. And it was group... which now had to decide how the synagogue, and this was really the real case, what's happening, how will we build the synagogue? And the Reform movement and the rabbi was very old, and they got the funding from Rothschild. So they had an agreement with Rothschild that he would pay for the renovation of the synagogue, which I showed you. But he said, I'm only paying for the renovation when the rabbi will be the one who to decide how this renovation, how the synagogue will look from inside. So the rabbi Trier wanted to decide, but the community didn't let him. And the majority in the community council, which was Reform, decided to bring in a new rabbi, Stein, which was not that radical, but he was not orthodox in our sense. He wanted to really reform the synagogue. So you had the first time a situation where the Orthodox said, we can't go anymore to this synagogue. And that's the beginning, if you want, the real urgency to start the own community. So, in the same time, the general politics was changing, because the revolution of 1848 was not victorious. In 1849, the King of Prussia took power again. He dismissed the parliament. And together with this went also the change in the town, the council of the Frankfurt town. The reactionaries, what you would call, or the people, the non-democrats, took over power. And now these people were very suspicious of the representatives of the Frankfurt Jewish community, which they saw as being supporters of the revolution. So they really supported now the Orthodox elements in the community, or the representatives of the Orthodox groups had, after 1848, 1849, a better chance to be their voice heard, to get into contact with the community, with Frankfurt, and telling them, we can't go to this new school, we can't be part of the community, we want to have our own community, which beforehand they wouldn't have been heard, they couldn't have the voice. In Germany, it's different than here. In Germany, and even until now, but of course in different ways, but in the 19th century, the community is autonomous, but it's not without the interference of the government. And the same was in Frankfurt. You could not do in your community what you wanted. There was a representative of the General Council, and he was responsible for the Jewish community. If you wanted to bring in a rabbi, if you wanted to change something in the community, if the community wanted to build a new school, they needed the approval of the city council. So, of course, in their own Beit Din, you know, they were autonomous in the marriages and whatever. But whenever there was something with a change of the community, they needed the approval of the town. So now, with the new changing situation, a group of Orthodox Frankfurt Jews, most of the main persons being very rich, decided that they wanted to bring in their own rabbi and to form their own group. Now, we are not talking still about a community, because in Germany until today, and also in the 19th century, in every town there is just one Jewish community. You don't have, like here, that the community is around schools. But if you live in Frankfurt today and you come to the town and you say, I'm Jewish, then you are part of the Frankfurt Jewish community. You don't choose your community. You can then try to argue, you know, who is my representative. But you have to try within this community to form your life or to build up, to find the group that's fitting you. But it's what you call in Germany, Körperschaft des öffentlichen Rechts. It's like a government-like organization. So if you would move today to some place, wherever, Berlin or Hamburg or Munich, you would become part of the Jewish community. And that's the same as it was in the 19th century. There was just, in every town, there was one Jewish community. So this group of rich Orthodox bankers, they went now to the community, which was favorable to the Orthodox, because they saw in the bankers a very conservative element, anti-revolutionaries, not connected to the reform and to the revolution which was before, and said, we need our own rabbi. We don't trust Rabbi Stein, who was brought in. He changes the ritual. We have now a synagogue. There will be a synagogue with an organ. We can't go there. So we need our own rabbi. And they got in 1851, they got the permission to bring in Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch as their rabbi. Still meaning they were members of the Frankfurt Jewish community, but this was like a private organization. And when Hirsch came, because they were so well-doing, as you see, within 2 years they managed to build a new Orthodox synagogue in the Schützenstraße and to put up a school. And the money came mostly from Baron Rothschild, from the last Frankfurt Rothschild, who was himself an adherent of Orthodoxy, in contrast to the Rothschild who moved to London or to Paris, which left the cause of Orthodoxy. So this is Samson Raphael Hirsch, as he's always portrayed in the books. I don't know exactly what age he's shown here, if that's how he looked in Frankfurt. But he came to Frankfurt into a very settled community, in a very structured community, with a sense of its heritage. And here you have in very short, I put down his life. What is very important, that he came from Hamburg. He was born in Hamburg. And Hamburg was the town where also when he was young, the reform tried to change the way of the community. So he knew about the battles. He fought reform, or he knew how his father fought reform when he was a young child. We are not talking about somebody who is coming from an Orthodox background without knowing the dangers of reform. He's really one who has seen the struggle against reform on his own way. He was a rabbi in different places, and then he came to Frankfurt in 1851, and he became the rabbi and the spiritual leader of this newly found community called Israelitische Religionsgesellschaft. But meaning that the members of this little group still had to be members of the Jewish community and had to pay their taxes to the Jewish community. So, when this organization of his, Israelitische Religionsgesellschaft, was founded, as you see, what is for us today, I think, a little bit astonishing, the criteria for membership were everybody could be member who had a Brit Milah and had a Jewish wedding. Nobody asks you, you know, do you really live, are you kosher at home? Is your shop open at Shabbat? Where are you going to pray? What are you doing? It was really the basic. I think, you know, today we wouldn't think that this is an internship for an Orthodox community. And only the representatives were asked to be Shomer Shabbat and to keep kosher. So it was really a trial to find a community as big as possible against the mainstream, meantime, reform of the Jewish community in Frankfurt. And the members you see here I put here, just to give you a little bit of the figures, we are talking about 1,100 Jews in Frankfurt, about 1877, about 10% of the population of Frankfurt general. And you see a very small group of this community is forming this community of Hirsch. And this is also because they've many felt even if they still remembered member of the community, to be part of a newly founded group is like being loyal to the century, 100 years old Frankfurt Jewish community. We had been part of this community. And they remained part of the general community until 1876, when they finally left the community. For this, a law had to be changed, saying that when you leave the Jewish community, you still be considered as a Jew. Because as I said before, every town had one Jewish community. And if you decided to leave this community, you stopped being a Jew. Until the end of the 19th century in Germany, there was no, as we call, no man's land. It's either you're Christian or you're Jewish or you're not. But you cannot be saying, I'm a Jew, but I'm not part of the community. The moment you would have gone to town, and the moment you live in a town and you declare that you're a Jew, you are part of the community, you have to pay taxes. And that's like even until today, the same way. When you would move from today, if a Jew comes, and maybe that's a difference to Toronto, that if somebody comes to town and wants to live today in any German town, he has to go to the offices of the town hall and declare, here am I, and I'm living in this and this street. You know, there is this duty to register. You can't just, you know, you can move wherever you want, which you could not in the 19th century, but today, of course, you can move wherever you want, but you then have to go and say, like, you have an identity card, and in the identity card you have to have the correct address. So you have to come and say, here I am, and I live there and there, and then they ask you, what's your confession? So you have the possibility to say, I have no confession today, which is okay. But the moment you say, I am Jew, you become a member of the Jewish community, and eventually they will write you a nice letter, please pay your taxes. And if you are working independent, but you're employed, then your employee will automatically deduct your taxes for the Jewish community from your general taxes. And if you want to avoid this, you have to go and say, I'm sorry, I'm not Jewish anymore, which today is possible. Then it was not, yes.
That's because the
government pays. Because this is because the government helps the Jewish community to get their taxes. The Jewish community doesn't have to run after its members. You see, that's going through the general tax institutions, and whenever you pay taxes and you're a member of the community, they will then deduct it. That's because that's the same way it goes with the churches. That's why the Catholics and the Protestants, they get also their taxes paid, of course, by their members only, but through the government. So what happened in the 120 years ago, in the 19th century, you could not, like today, leave the community and saying, I'm still Jew. The moment you left the community, you're not considered a Jew anymore. And what Hirsch fought since the time he put up his community was to be that his little organization or his community would be recognized as the large Frankfurt Jewish community, as a separate parallel community. And this was only possible in 1876 and a couple of years later, when the parliament in Prussia then passed the law of succession, meaning that you could leave your church, and it was originally not done for the Jews, which are a small minority in Germany, but it was done for Catholics or Protestants who wanted to leave the church but still wanted to be considered Catholics. That it's written in their identity they are a Catholic or a Protestant. So when this law 3 years earlier in 73 was passed, that Christians could leave the church, meaning they don't have to pay taxes anymore, but still could be considered as Christians. Then afterwards, of course, because they were meantime equal rights, the Jews also got the possibility to leave the community. And from then on, you had two Jewish communities in Frankfurt. And Frankfurt was the first place which this took place, and then it went into other German communities. And from then on, you had the possibility to have different Jewish communities according to their regulation. And then we know exactly on the 26th of September, Hirsch left the Jewish community. Yes?
Why did Catholics
want to be? Oh, because maybe, you know, they did not agree with the politics of the Pope, or they had, you know, internal, like today, discussions. Right, exactly. And that's exactly why Hirsch, the moment he became rabbi of this community and the community was reformed, he started a battle telling his members that they had to leave the community because they didn't want to pay taxes to a community that was reform, where he could not trust. He said, I, as an Orthodox Jew, I cannot pay my taxes to a reform Jewish community because I'm paying my taxes to a group that is transgressing, if you want, the holy laws. So this was his fight, but it took him quite, you see, more than 25 years in order to be able to form this group. And I'm stressing this because many people think the moment he came to Frankfurt, you know, he could build up his group and he was outside the Jewish community. He was for many, many years, he and all his supporters were part still of the Jewish community. And he could function as a rabbi, as a spiritual leader, but for example, he could not... he had no any decision without or more than the spiritual realm. If you need, for example, a wedding or something legal, then you always had to go to the rabbi of the community. The problem was the moment you leave the Jewish community, you're not entitled, of course, anymore to the cemetery of the Jewish community. And if you are descendant of an old Frankfurt family, which most were, and you have your whole, I mean, it's not only the tradition, but it's also very practically, you don't want to leave the cemetery where your parents and grandparents and forefathers are buried. So what happened in the end, that Hirsch left the community, but very few of his members followed him. Most members of his Israelitische Religionsgesellschaft, of his secessionist group, stayed also members of the Jewish community. And if you had enough, if you were wealthy enough to pay the taxes for both communities, there was no problem, there was no exclusion. So what happened in reality, that very, very few families, you see here, when he left the community in 76, his Israelitische Religionsgesellschaft, his group, had about 350 families, but only 70 or 80 were following him politically. And these were mostly people who were dependent upon him, the teachers of his school, everybody who was connected to his rabbinate, and everybody who could not afford to also pay the taxes to the Jewish community. And the rest stayed they were part of his community, but they were also part of the general Frankfurt Jewish community. So they could be buried at the cemetery and they could still be the part of their old community. And I think it's a question of solidarity, of Jewish solidarity. Hirsch, the way he lived his Judaism, or let's say Orthodox Judaism, was for him more important than the idea that the rest of the members of the community were also Jews. He said, I, as an Orthodox Jew, I'm different from the Reformed Jew. And for this, we cannot be together. And it's different, It's a different way of looking at your identity, because he, Hirsch, understood himself, as all Frankfurt Jews, as German Jews. So by nationality, they were Germans. By their religion, they were Jews. Meaning reducing your religion, I think, and that's a different notion than we feel today, maybe. Making your religion a confession, not part of your ethnic identity, not part of your national identity. Because from your national identity, you're German, and your confession, your religion, you're Jewish. And then there is nothing, if I would say it very, very extreme, there is nothing that connects Hirsch to his, let's say, to his, to the rabbi of the Jewish community, to Horowitz. It's for him the same, in my opinion, and that's how I interpret this history, as a non-Jewish German, if to be very extreme. And that's why he wanted the people to leave the community. He had this argument. He wrote to Rabbi Bamberger in Würzburg, a famous German rabbi, to get his help, to get his support. And Bamberger supported Hirsch as long as it came to the real, let's say, political act of leaving the community, of leaving the Frankfurt, the boundaries of the Frankfurt Jewish community. But because of his pressure, and because the Frankfurt Jewish community, who had not only Reform members, but also some Orthodox members, was afraid that maybe all the Orthodox members would leave, and then, of course, the community would become smaller, would become less influential, would of also lose many of these very well-to-do bankers. They were ready to make a compromise. And they said, okay, we understand that for Orthodox Jews, it's not enough to be member to have your own shul, but you also want to be sure that all the community services are according to halacha. They made very big concessions. They built a new Orthodox shul for the Orthodox in the community, and they brought in an Orthodox rabbi, Markus Horowitz, who was, who was as Orthodox as Hirsch, but he stayed within the community. So, and the Orthodox got the right to be responsible for all services where halacha is important, like the cemetery, kashrut in all institutions, and things like this. But, of course, they had to cooperate with liberal rabbis, meaning now that you had two kinds, and they built this Berner Platz synagogue. I'm just saying, this is Hirsch. This is Markus Horowitz, who came to Frankfurt for the general community, and he has, like, you could say, the same genesis, the same way of becoming a rabbi, like Hirsch. You know, it's like, it's, and that's why I think that the secession is a political issue, and not so much a question of halacha. So he became the rabbi of the community, and this is the synagogue which was built for him, the Berner Platz Synagogue. There is a very famous painting of Beckmann, Max Beckmann, where you see the synagogue in a surrealistic kind of way, and you see it big and famous. So from then on, you have Frankfurt, as I call it, a tale of two communities, because it's, you know, it's one city with two different communities, with most members of the Austrittsgemeinde, of the secessionist, of the Hirsch community, being also member in the general community. You have one, the old community continuing, the Einheitsgemeinde, where you have, like you have today in Germany, you have one community with different streams. You have liberal rabbis, you have Orthodox rabbis, together in the community. Everyone has his shul, but of course they act together, they meet together, and they have to accept themselves one to the other as a rabbi. It means for the Orthodox rabbi, the liberal, the Reform rabbi is a rabbi, and he has to accept his decisions. On the other hand, you have the Hirsch community, which is a homogeneous community. They have one idea, one ideology, and no compromise whatsoever. Most of the members in the Israelitische Religionsgesellschaft, in the small community, have double membership. And it's a bitter rivalry between both communities, especially from the side of Hirsch, because he was, of course, the small community, the new community. And I think he felt betrayed that many of his supporters did not leave the general community. Many of those people who funded this Israelitische Religionsgesellschaft, of these banking families, like Rothschild himself and others, said, we are part also of the old Jewish community, and we are ready to support you, but we're not ready to leave our community. And it's also a question, I think, of politics versus education, because the way of living in the, or the way of teaching, or the school in the general community for the Orthodox, there was no difference than it was the Hirsch synagogue. They had a yeshiva, as you see, they had a school here. Because of the pressure of Hirsch, also the general community not only now supported the reform school, the Philanthropin, but they also built up Orthodox school. They had the yeshiva even before Hirsch in his community. And they had all the streams, whereas the Israelitische Religionsgesellschaft, as you see, had only a small group. They had later, after Hirsch died, they had the yeshiva. And of course, they had to build an own cemetery, because the moment that you left the community, you forfeit your right to be buried in the Jewish cemetery. And this was one of the strongest weapons of the Jewish community, which they could argue, not people not to leave. So until today, you have where the old cemetery is, you see the part of the Hirsch cemetery. And in order to show that they really left the Jewish community, they put a wall up between the cemeteries from the side of the Hirsch community. And this wall was destroyed during World War II. So now it's like you have one big cemetery, but that. It's very interesting is also one difference that the Hirsch community was mostly Frankfurt families, old Frankfurt families who could afford being double members, and because it had a very special German way, I would say, of practicing Jewish life, they had very few East European Jews. The East European Jews who came to Frankfurt in the end of the 19th century, in the beginning of the 20th century, 1910, 1915, or after the war, they all became members of the general community. And they did not become members of Hirsch, very few, because Hirsch, as much as he was Orthodox, as I said, he was a German, he had studied at the university, and he, in his shul, in his synagogue, he introduced many reforms which would be, for us today, was to attribute it to the reform movement. They had a choir, he was giving a speech in German, there had to be silence, children under 5 years were not allowed into shul, and when they were older than five, they had to be in accompaniment of their parents. So it was not maybe the Orthodox shul we know today when we think, you know, about how it was in Poland in the end of the 19th century. It was a very German way of practicing. And you can see sometimes pictures when they have high holidays, you see them with the sai, I don't know how you call it in English, the high hat, you know. Huh? Top hat, right. You know, and if you wouldn't know that these people go to shul, you would think, you know, they go to a Christian, to the church. Yes, that's how it is. So most of the East European immigrants to Frankfurt, they were members of the general community. So as I said, there was a bitter rivalry between the communities, and there is a statement of Horowitz, Markus Horowitz, the rabbi of the Einheitsgemeinde, of the general community. He said, while I as an Orthodox rabbi fight against reform, Hirsch as an Orthodox rabbi fights against me, against the Orthodox. Because this, of course, was his way of trying to keep the to bring more members into his community. A problem for many Jews was, of course, that you had different jurisdiction. And one case is, for example, the Eruv. I mean, in most things, the practices were very similar. But because the Hirsch community, Hirsch and then his follower, successor, Breuer, did not accept the authority of Horowitz and his successor, Nobel, they did not accept their rulings. So when the Orthodox members of the community, or when Nobel decided that there was a possibility to make an Eruv in Frankfurt, and he did one in 1914, it was not accepted by the Hirsch. So this was one of the few things where you had a very strange situation, that there were Orthodox in town who could carry and Orthodox who could not. Because in most things the rulings were similar. There was no difference at all. But the Eruv, for example, it was one of the most significant things. But of course, you don't have to forget, I think one always has also to remind that his very strong fight against the reform was also the reason that brought the reform movement in the general community to make these concessions for the religious. So it's a question, like many think, you know, maybe he should have fought and then not made the secession, not really leave the community. And others say, no, only by leaving it, by really establishing his own community, he could bring to the point the idea that Orthodox has to have its own rights and has to be considered. So Frankfurt is, in the 19th century, the center for both movements, for the Reform and for the Orthodox. And I think that from there, really from Hirsch, the idea of the confidence of an Orthodox movement started. I think that's, for us today, maybe the contribution of Hirsch relevant in our world. If you have questions, please. Thank you. Yes.
Is there a parallel
in other cities? Yes. There was, but I think there was, of course. In Berlin, you have the community of Israel Hildesheimer, Adas Yeshurun, who went out. And after Hirsch, after this law of succession, you know, which he fought through, he was like the forefront, you had many little communities where you had, where the Orthodox went out of the. Of course, he was just the representative. He was the most strongest. But I think the difference is maybe that in a community like Berlin, or I know in Wiesbaden or wherever in Karlsruhe, where there were these Austrotsgemeinden, you did not have, or the struggle was not that strong, because you did not have these 100 centuries old Jewish communities. You know, Berlin, the Jews only came in the beginning of the 18th century. You know, it's a young community, so you did not have the sense of a community for hundreds of years, and here comes somebody and breaks it off. You see? But of course, there were, he was just the representative. Yes.
A comment and a joke.
Yes.
Oh. The Orthodox rabbi that had an Eruv and others that disagreed with him. And in general now, I think you have an American and a Canadian Jewry, this dichotomy of the Orthodox and the neo-modern Orthodox. And Israel the same way with this conversion question.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Everywhere you have this, but the difference is that, you know, I think here, if I understand it right, you're organized through your shul, right? There is not one Jewish community, and which is like if the government of, or the mayor of Toronto, you know, wants to talk to a rabbi, he wouldn't know who's the rabbi of the Okay, you see, and that's the difference in Frankfurt. Yes. Yes. Right. 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 I think it's both. I think it's natural growth on one hand, and also I think that the moment that you see that it's developing, you know, that this group who started it, they were just the beginning. More, there were Orthodox who joined it from the Frankfurt community. I think so. And these are, there is a very good book from Lieberles. These numbers I took from Robert Lieberles about the founding of the out of the Hirsch. And he, I think, he wrote the book about the, and in very detail he showed how this came about. Okay. Thank you for listening.